Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Talking Critic, where our slogan is Carpe Canem. I am your host, Dixie Riddlecup Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of The Critic. Who else is here with me today?
Michael Raparez, and I'm hoarding my nuts because winter's coming.
Who else is here?
I'm Diana Goodman, and I'm being unfaithful to my wife, Alice Tompkins. You heard me. Alice Tompkins.
I had no idea. And who else?
I'm Henry Gilbert, and I like pepperoni on my putzes.
I bet you do. And today's episode is Sherman, Woman, and Child.
All hail Duke. Duke is life.
And today's episode...
line of the show, right?
Yes. Already line of the show.
All right, we'll get to it. Today's episode aired on March 5th, 1995, the premiere of the second season on Fox. And Henry will tell us, as always, what was in theaters at this point in history.
Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
Oh boy, Bobby, Jonathan Taylor Thomas rightly tortures Chevy Chase in Man of the House. Jeff Goldblum uses psychic visions to save Alicia Silverstone from a serial killer in Hideaway. Mm-hmm. And Peter Falk plays an incredibly old caretaker of D.B. Sweeney in the sappy tearjerker Roommates.
I thought we just had a movie about a dreamy teen getting even with Dad. How many more of these can we take?
I mean, we didn't even talk about getting even with Dad.
We did talk about it.
We did. You're
weeks
right.
Weeks ago.
This is the third one of these. It was kids love these. They wanted to see a cute kid that could be them torturing an adult.
Yes. Dreamy tweens with floppy hair. Never go out of style.
But did any of you guys see Roommates? I saw that movie.
Nope.
Peter Falk in old man makeup. He plays.
Well, he was already an old man.
He plays a 107-year-old.
Okay, wasn't that
Burns
old.
Level aged man. So he is a grandpa who adopts D.B. Sweeney as a kid when his parents die horribly. Then he becomes a roommate in college with D.B. Sweeney, and he is this old baker who's like 97 when Sweeney meets his wife, Julianne Moore, and then she at first doesn't like him, and then eventually he approves of her. Then, it cut forward 10 years later, Julianne Moore dies in a car wreck, and so Peter Falk's like, I gotta stay alive longer, I gotta take care of you and your kids.
Just one more year, ma'am, just one more year.
And when he realizes...
Come on.
And when he realizes that D.B. Sweeney is independent enough and he can take care of the kids on his own, he finally gives up the ghost and dies. And his character was named Rock. And so if you want to see Peter Falk acting like a 100-year-old man who, like, remembers people that are in history books, that's the movie for you.
Who's named Rock for symbolism.
Well, now I don't have to see it. Thank you, Henry.
Every time you say D.B. Sweeney, I keep thinking it's going to set up like some BoJack Horseman-level wordplay. Like, D.B. Sweeney plays a feeble meanie who wants to wear a beanie. Yeah.
That was great.
That was great.
Thank you.
D.B. Sweeney was the star of Strange Luck, the Fox one-season wonder that went after X-Files. It was my favorite of the failed shows that would go after X-Files that couldn't really keep the same audience.
They had a lot of failed shows in that slot.
Meanwhile, Hideaway was a Dean Koontz novel, one of those, and so another one of like a woman being tortured while a man tries to find her. Mm. And he does save the day in it. The serial killer in it is played by... the actor who's like the creepy guy and everything, who was the mentally handicapped brother of the girlfriend Brenda in 6 Feet Under, if you remember him, like Eric something or other.
Oh.
He's in everything as a creep guy.
That guy.
Like,
yeah.
So of course he plays the serial killer in this movie.
It's the part he was born to play, baby. So let's get off the bat right now with season 2 of The Critic. Already there are big changes starting with the intro. There's no more of the Rhapsody in Blue like gentle lead up to the shot of Jay in bed. It's more of just like a driving, like we're building up to the phone gag with a punctual song. Mm-hmm. And then we get animation with the phone gag for the first time too, where Jay's head shrinks. Is there new animation for all of these? I can't remember.
No. Him on the ice rink is the same old animation. Mm-hmm. Him going to sleep at the end of it is the new Jay head as well.
I meant specifically the animation on the phone gag. There was never animation.
I think this is the first and last time that there's
special
animation.
They only did it once? Okay.
Because after this it just switches to the radio.
gag.
Oh, you're right. There are radio gags now, not phone
That's
gags.
True.
Okay.
Right.
This is the last phone gag.
And, well, yeah, so the show was canceled by ABC, negotiated immediately to go to Fox. It would now be following The Simpsons, which is exactly where it should have been.
Yep.
They're unbelievably, The Simpsons never had an animated show following it until The Critic, which would then continue until now and probably until The Simpsons is off the air. It will always be partnered with animated shows. Mm-hmm. The Critic would die in one season. Spoiler alert for the rest of these episodes.
Yes, they never made more.
It would then be replaced by King of the Hill, which would then would come in Family Guy, and now currently Bob's Burgers as well. Like so many shows have gone after it.
Part of the reason that Critic died in a year, they say on the commentary, is because it was one of those political things where the deal was made to buy the Critic by an outgoing executive, and his replacement didn't like this because, like, oh, this is my predecessor's thing. I have to kill it.
Well, so that was the unfortunate situation from them. Also on the commentaries, Reese very meanly blames King of the Hill and hates King of the Hill.
Yes, unfairly, I think.
It's not fair that he saw it as, but he is right about this thing that happens all the time in television, thanks to some restrictions that went away that, like, it used to be – even if Disney owned ABC, Disney couldn't produce an ABC show. They would have to go to an outside production company. That's why a Fox show would appear on CBS, for example. Mm-hmm. But those rules started going away, and that's why NBC, for example, made The Office. Like, so if ABC is choosing to renew a show that they make versus a show they don't make, which one do you think they're going to make more of? And so that was Reese's crux of his hatred of King of the Hill, that King of the Hill is a Fox animated show. The Critic is a Columbia Pictures animated show.
And Mike Reese's strange quote on the commentary is, Hank Hill is just Homer with glasses, which is, I'm thinking, have you ever seen King of the Hill?
No.
They are such different characters.
I mean, if he hates it that much, he probably only watched like 5 minutes of it.
Yeah.
Just like, fuck this killed my show.
And The Critic was a success for Fox. It retained a lot of the Simpsons viewers. And I mean, The Simpsons was popular at the time, but it was like in the Nielsen ratings, it was between like 30 and 50 in this year. And
for not Home Improvement.
Yeah, for sure.
And also part of the deal was that Gene and Reese, they would rebuild their staff. They'd hired in some new people. They would also have a definitely smaller budget and only a 10 episode order instead of 13 is normally the tradition of a half season show. As I learned from being a Mystery Science Theater fan, the idea was like you order 13 and then you order the back 9 if it's successful. And but then in this case, they only had 10, but they would produce 2 more shows of The Simpsons, as we will likely dig into even more on A Star Is Burns episode of Talking Simpsons. But there was absolutely upheaval within the Simpsons production people that Fox wanted 26 episodes a season of The Simpsons, and the writing staff was very clear of like, we will make 22. We will not make more a production season of The Simpsons. You're going to have to hire someone else. In comes The Critic, and they're like, well, Al Jean and Mike Reese already know how to make Simpsons episodes, so they will have their own island of production and make their own shows. So in season 6, they produce A Star Is Burns and Round Springfield, the Blood and Guts Murphy episode. And in season 7, they will produce the Springfield Files, the X-Files crossover, and...
That's season 8.
Oh, that's season 8. Okay, well...
Season 7, Merkin took a few episodes. I mean...
That's right.
Fox wanted The Simpsons to make more clip shows every year, like 4 clip shows. The solution was, we won't do this. Our production can't handle making more episodes, but we'll have these satellite offices for a few years. I think Merkin ran one for a year, and I think Al Jean and Mike Reese ran one for another year, and that's where these bonus episodes came from. I think 2 a season. That's what they agreed upon.
Yeah, that's right. And it was Simpson Tide was the other extra they did that year of Gene and Reese. And it was actually the last time Gene and Reese were credited together on something. They had a creative divorce after that. This also aired the same night as A Star Is Burns, which was a great way to promote The Critic by having him on The Simpsons, but also caused a huge amount of internal strife on The Simpsons. But we'll save that for
I mean, yeah, when I first saw this, I didn't read the papers, as they say. I wasn't following the news. I'm like, whatever happened to The Critic? And then it's like, Jay Sherman's on The Simpsons, and like, The Critic is coming back? It was surprising for me. I don't know how you guys felt about seeing The Critic on Fox suddenly appear. Were you there day one?
This is probably my most watched episode of The Critic because I think after the two episodes of The Critic, we then just created a separate Critic tape where the rest of the episodes would live. But this one was on The Simpsons tape. So when we were watching these episodes of The Simpsons, this was in the mix as well. Mm-hmm. So I saw it a million times.
This is the oral history of Henry's tapes. Put them all together.
Yeah. No, I was paying attention, honestly. I think my mom might have actually subscribed to Variety at this time, too.
Wow.
She subscribed to Variety for a while, even though she was not in the biz. Mm-hmm. It was just interesting.
But you lived in Southern California.
I lived in L.A.
Yeah, I lived in L.A.
So, yeah. So to find out, like, oh, they're negotiating. Oh, it's coming back. Oh, but it's an animated show, so it's going to be back eventually.
Yeah. Give it 9 months.
And then, yeah, to see it paired up with The Simpsons, I was like, oh, finally. I don't think I even knew that it was created by people who'd worked on The Simpsons. I was just like, yes, this is where this needs to be. This is perfect. And it didn't last long.
No, it didn't.
I was
It was unfair. And I feel like in a different world where with a different executive in charge, this could have lasted another like 5 years, at least until like the 2000s. I could see The Critic going on and on.
A couple more seasons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Michael, were you there for day one too?
Yeah.
I don't think I was. I'm trying to remember because I remember watching it on ABC, and I think I just probably caught a couple episodes and then it went away. And then it's like, oh, it's on Fox now with new episodes. Mm-hmm. And I probably came in like midway through the season or something.
I
actually missed the Simpsons episode that kind of inaugurated it and like saw it years later.
Interesting. We talked about some of the changes to the opening, but changes to the animation in general are pretty big. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, Jay looks a bit different, but actually everybody looks a bit different. And this is a noticeably lower budget than the ABC series had. They're not playing with ABC money. They're playing with Fox money. And I see a noticeable dip in the animation quality. It's not a badly animated show, but it looks a bit worse than the ABC show. But everyone is much squatter with much bigger heads, much larger pupils. It's sort of backing away from the Al Hirschfeld style art of the original season.
Yeah. Well, and Jay especially.
Yeah, yes. Jay looks like there's like a fisheye lens over his face all the time. Like,
well, and this episode is even written by Gene and Reese, which traditionally on a show, creators only write the pilot. But when they write another episode, this is kind of a re-pilot for them. And they reintroduce every character on the show to some degrees less than others. They add two new primary characters to the cast and do an overall softening of the edges. Like it be the – I think of the Foxier as the zanier critic by far and less cruel, less mean,
Jay,
less angry.
Jay is no longer this like disgusting creature that no woman ever would want to touch or look at or talk to.
Yeah.
He is still a food monster and more so every moment.
But people no longer confuse him with a bear that likes key lime pie.
Yeah. It's weird that you say that – I mean you think the animation quality goes down because I feel like it goes up a little bit.
In this episode especially, like there's some noticeable set pieces.
Yeah, I feel like they're economical with it.
Yeah.
There'll be lots of splurges.
There are a few like splurges of animation. I do feel like overall it just feels like they had less money to play with probably.
Yeah, I feel like they used it well.
Yeah, definitely.
And funny you mention overall because that is the biggest new addition to the cast.
Yes.
Voice actress Park Overall.
I love her voice. I think
she's amazing.
Her and Charles Napier should have released a book on tape of the phone book just going back and forth.
If you haven't listened to it yet, you really should. Our interview, Bob and I's interview with Reed Harrison, who wrote the Simpsons episode of Springfield Files, but also worked on the unproduced third season of The Critic.
Ooh.
And the episode he was writing was one where Alice moves back to Tennessee and Jay follows her there. And it's all this Southern fried joke stuff. And Napier is there too. And it would
nice.
It sounded beautiful. That sounded like a perfect episode.
My favorite episode that was written.
And so Park Overall was one of those character actresses who would appear in funny stuff and had wonderful for her Southern fried voice. And I think her most famous role up to this point was in the Golden Girls spinoff Empty Nest.
Yes, I was a big nest head, as they called us. And I immediately...
Nobody called you that.
I'm sure someone did. But I immediately recognized her voice because no one sounds like her. I'm like, oh, it's the nurse from Empty Nest. She played Laverne on Empty Nest. I was like, oh, it's Laverne from Empty Nest. That's great. I love her voice. She was a sassy, cute nurse
she
on that show.
She also ran for state senator in Tennessee in 2012.
That's right.
She did not win, though.
Wow. Apparently,
she didn't even win the primary.
She's also a huge environmental activist, which is awesome. Like, she seems like a great woman.
And I saw some of her platforms from her Senate run as well that she for one thing said, these bathroom bills about trans people is only meant to attack other people. These are wasteful. Like, whoa, that's
nice.
Pretty.
She said trans people should have their prod.
Their prod?
Prod?
And she was a supporter of Bernie Sanders in 2016 primary, though she eventually obviously said support whoever is the Democratic nominee.
Yes.
But so that's the really awesome Park overall. A great, great addition. Like her voice is love her voice.
I love her design too. I love that I think the commentary confirms that she's designed to look like Holly Hunter.
Yeah, so, that's right.
Because she looks she really does look like little Holly Hunter.
I like her army jacket she dons sometimes too. It's very cute.
But going back to what you were saying about the budget getting cut for the animation, like they talk about on the commentary that they were actually approached after this season by UPN to do a third season. And it's like, but they wanted to A, cut our budget even further, and B, they wanted us to retool it as a kids show.
Oh, boy. I wouldn't have wanted to see that.
Yeah, and I think, too, part of the retooling was adding a new cute kid to the show. Though I like Alice's daughter Penny is funny, but she is the parody they did in the first season where they're like, oh, here's your new kid. I find you weevilting. And that is what Penny is.
Exactly.
She is the cute new kid to make it more appealing.
I mean, her lines are funny, but they're no different than any other cute, precocious kid line on any other sitcom.
I know. I also wondered if
I want to taste blood.
blood. The joke, I wonder, too, if thematically Jay's head shrinking in the beginning was them commenting on his head changing. It's probably just a lucky coincidence.
I mean, from the first episode on, they're making his head less flat. Because the pilot, his head is so flat, it's disturbing almost.
But I do think budget – when we talk about the budget, my feeling is that like in the first season, they front load the show with – they spend all their money in like the first half of the season. And the second half, they're like, shit, we're out of money.
Yes.
Like that's – in the pilot episode, the best moment, most gorgeous moment is Beauty and King Dork.
That's beautiful.
And though when I look back on the rest of season 13, or the 13 episodes, I'm like, I kind of wish they could have moved some of that money to a different, to the parts where they're like reusing the same animation for a minute straight.
Yeah. So they have to reintroduce a lot of the premise and the characters. So appropriately enough, they start with a movie parody, A Few More Good Men. I think the last time in history you could have made A Few Good Men parody. Everyone loved doing it. They did it last year. The Simpsons did two of them the previous year. So let's hear their version of this with Christian Slater, William Devane, and Jack Nicholson in A Few More Good Men.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth. I can handle the truth. The truth is you talk like me, you act like me. You don't have an original bone in your body. That's a freaking lie.
Could the stenographer read that last part back?
What am I, a freaking minor bird?
That joke's even better in audio because it's the exact voice.
Yeah, I was not as familiar with William Devane as I was with Jack Nicholson and Christian Slater. But looking up clips, I'm like, yes, he does sound a lot like Jack Nicholson. He's not doing an impression like Christian Slater kind of is with his acting choice.
Mm. What's he known for, that William Devane?
Mm.
Was he in Rolling Thunder? I want to say he's in Rolling Thunder. That's a fun movie.
Now it's been interesting to see Christian Slater has become the funny casting choice and stuff. You're like, oh, that's Christian Slater. It's like, that was my reaction to him in Archer when I heard his voice oh, hey, that's Christian Slater. Huh, that's funny. It's much better than starring in Uwe Boll films, that's for sure.
Poor Dave Foley. He deserves better. So we get another movie parody. It's mostly visual, but I love that they spent money on this stop-motion animation sequence, The Nightmare Before Hanukkah. And let's hear this.
Excuse me, is this Hanukkah Town?
No, it's the Vatican, and I'm Pope Shlomo. Oi.
So they actually outsourced that to the Kyoto Brothers. They're sort of, guns for hire and stop-motion animation. They developed the Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh.
Yeah, wow.
They gave you kids nightmares in the 80s, and also the Large Marge sequence in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, amongst many others. So they're guns for hire for this sort of effects work.
But that looked expensive, and it reminded me just of Beauty and King Dork, too, of like, you guys spent all this money on a one-off joke that I bet they probably thought, well, these claymation doesn't look that good, so I'm sure it'll be cheap and easy. But it's a very memorable scene. Like,
yes,
I love that.
And Maurice LaMarche and Chris Sarandon.
Yes.
Is this Hanukkah Town?
I love the design of all the little guys who live in Hanukkah Town. They're these little short guys. They're very, like, they're wider than they are tall, and they got the little black hats and little black things. And,
and instead of pulling, like, a snowflake out of the air, he pulls, like, matzah bread out of the air or something like
that.
The
door is matzah.
Yeah, the gates are made out of matzah.
That's right.
and is just chewing on, which is pretty rude to do.
Yeah, that is pretty rude.
Don't mess up the town, man.
Eat your gates.
So some characters will show up that will show up in the Simpsons episode that Al Jean and Mike Reiss would later write. Jay's getting his butt kicked by the Benedictine monks, which was a short-lived craze.
Oh, back to his hair in a can.
Oh, right.
They fucking love those monk jokes.
They do.
Gene and Reiss.
To be fair, that was just inexplicable, that fad. Like, let's put monk music to New Age. Sorry, monks chanting to New Age music.
Well, there was that record called Chant that flew off shelves for some reason.
My mom had it.
Double platinum in 1994. The Benedictine monks of Santo Domingo de Silos.
I mean, that's popular enough to make fun of.
And I don't think it's even like Enigma, like which was what you're describing with the chants over New Age music. But
the chants themselves.
It was
themselves.
Just chanting.
Okay,
right?
I remember the chanting over actual like instruments or, synthesized instruments.
I think there was some.
I know some commenters don't like that I mentioned every time a Simpsons joke is repeated in Critic or the Simpsons does it. But this one is actually the most egregious.
Yeah.
On the same night, in the same episode, in an episode also overseen by Gene and Reiss in A Star Is Burns, the Rappin' Rabbis joke is a joke on the monks. They're just like, won't eat pork, not even with a fork, won't touch this.
Yes.
It is the same joke that Kent Brockman even introduces it as, move over, singing monks. We've got the Rappin' Rabbis.
Yes. I was wrong. It was not Al Jean and Mike Reiss who wrote the episode. It was Ken Keeler, but it was their staff who wrote it. Yeah.
They did the rewrite on it. Ken Keeler was a junior writer, I'm going to blame Gene and Reiss for doubling up again the same night. And maybe they didn't know it was going to be the same night when they aired, but just like, yeesh.
It's not just, the monks are performing. They have a whole variety hour.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, they got a Karnak bit, like from Carson.
Johnny Carson's been off the air for 3 years, and they hate him so much.
They sing Pretty Woman to a nun, and she's so bodacious, like St. Ignatius.
Mm, right.
The Pope is going to be guest starring, and he's going to be breaking ice blocks with his head.
I would absolutely watch this show. Jay,
I absolutely will watch Benedictine Monk Hour.
St. Ignatius, by the way, is St. Ignatius of Loyola and is the patron saint of all spiritual retreats.
Interesting. Yep.
And obviously the name of the lead character, one of the funniest books ever, Confederacy of Dunces.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that book.
Ignatius J. Reilly.
I'm that smart. I read a book, guys.
Wow. Yeah. I have to wonder what they were singing originally because their lips do not match up to Pretty Woman at all.
Yeah.
So it's like, what couldn't they clear that they wanted the monks to sing? I want to know.
It had to be a clearance joke. Yeah. And then we get to a very funny joke about how Doris is going to die, who she will be dead in 9 months.
Exactly.
That's a countdown clock.
I did not capture that joke, but she's introduced spraying hair onto Jay's head like in the pilot.
Yeah.
So very nice. It's symmetry, like the Star Wars prequels, if you will.
Yes, they rhyme. But I do like her delivery of, that's supposed to be a bunny.
She blows smoke rings to tell her she's about to die.
It's a very handy trick.
Yeah.
So Jay is feeling alone and,
as
a failure.
Of season one as
well. Yeah, it's funny how the season two premiere is just like every season one idea is just kind of mashed into a ball. Like, Jay needs love. Jay is failing at his job.
And I think the real theme of this episode is Alice is the change to that. Her showing up ends all those problems that Gene and Reiss clearly knew were the major problems with season one, and Alice is the fix to that, both in continuity, both in the show and outside of the show.
So should we jump to Jay meeting Alice for the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mama, the stranger's coming.
Don't worry, I've got my pepper spray.
Mmm, jalapeno. Look, I just wanted to offer to share my cab.
Sorry, I hate not being friendly, but this is New York. You know, you look familiar.
I'm Jay Sherman, the famous film critic. I used to have a big show on ABC for about a week.
There you go. He's bitter.
For about a week. The Gene and Reiss have a lot of bitterness to work through.
He had a show for 4 weeks, and then it was all burned off in the summer.
I did
or
like
five.
Them calling attention to the fact that it's like, this is like a silent movie setup with like the single mother dropping her groceries in the rain. You expect to have the landlord waiting around the corner twirling his mustache.
She will be evicted, and he will try to pay her rent.
Pay your rent?
Yes. It's not clear why she's being evicted. I'm guessing she didn't pay the rent. We'll get to that later.
She ran out of money. But that it is. a very cliche of the troubled woman. It's a very cliched way to introduce a woman that will obviously is his love interest, and they're trying to get in some of the Sam and Diane will they won't they stuff, which mm-hmm. I'm glad they only teased that out for like 5 episodes before mm-hmm. they finally like look they
barely just, even tease.
Yeah, though as a kid too who didn't like things being spoiled, or I was just annoyed of like she shouldn't be in the opening with Jay. She hasn't met him yet in the time of us watching this opening. Yeah.
Just going back to that great shot from Manhattan, but the 59th Street Bridge collapses.
Yes. Which they did in every Doris has her day.
Yep, they same did. Joke.
That's where it came from. Make a wish.
Gene and Reese had never met a joke they like, they don't want to do more than
just
once.
Like Looney Tunes.
Joke, yeah.
Well, to be fair, nobody saw the ABC series.
That's true.
Especially the summer episodes. Absolutely no one watched it. And they couldn't even legally air on Fox. So as far as they know, those episodes didn't exist. So you're right.
Is Jay immediately invited up to Alice's apartment after the grocery thing or what? I forget how it happens.
Yeah, to dry off, like as happens in every meet cute.
Yeah, and Penny doesn't like him because he hated The Lion King. She punches him and then kissed him, which is also what Rex Reed did.
Another nice Rex Reed joke. Yes. I wonder if Alice's last name is Tompkins because of the co-executive producer or co-supervising producer, I forget his nickname, Steve Tompkins.
I'm pretty sure it is.
He's one of the top names on the show. Pretty much he's the first name you see when the show itself starts, which is about as high as you get, I think, if you're not the executive producer.
Yep. Well, before they can go to the apartment, Jay has to check his schedule.
Oh, yes.
I love that joke.
It's a great day. Each day is manic, the next day depressive. Next day manic, next day depressive.
Do we know which day he's on? Is it depressive or manic? Which one would be more appropriate?
Now they can't do that.
It's a time thing. It's not a
that's
day.
That's true. That's true.
It's every hour.
Yes,
so
phases.
That's how bad it is for him. So I'd never heard of Pat Riley.
What?
I did not know who that was until, well, now I do. I looked it up.
I mean, you find a picture and you get the joke. Just like his hair is just a wet
a
mess.
Slick back guy. A slick back
he always had
guy.
Perfectly slick back hair. He was a basketball coach.
It shows
like,
you.
Oh, my God, I look like Pat Riley.
It shows you that you're an NBA sports executive. Like, I slick back my hair. I'm so cool and awesome. Only cool guys slick back their hair.
And there's a lot of jokes of plants falling on Jay's head that I didn't capture, except for the last one. It's a running gag that pays off eventually.
Yes, yeah.
And it's one of those things that it's like, this shouldn't work, but it does beautifully.
Yes.
Thanks to repetition and the sound, basically like
sound
a car crash sound of it, like clunk and... Then we get to see that Alice actually is the perfect human who is good at everything she does.
Yes, let's hear at what I call Alice origins.
Is that Penny's dad?
Yeah, that's Cyrus. I was waiting tables in Knoxville while Cyrus tried to make it as a country singer, but then I began to suspect he was cheating on me.
How?
It was in his songs, My Lion Heart, Daddy's Stepping Out, and then his album, I'm Being Unfaithful to My Wife, Alice Tompkins. You heard me, Alice Tompkins.
I feel like there's a very similar Lurleen Lumpkin joke with these song titles.
Yes, Cyrus and Lurleen should get together because they're just big. It's definitely from the same school as Lurleen's song titling.
Yeah, for sure.
Which, again, I don't know. In a different world, Pat, she could have played Lurleen if not Beverly Daniels.
And this scene also is like one of the reasons I say like there's some definitely improved animation in at least this episode in that like – while she is talking, like you can see Jay going through all the motions of like eating this roasted marshmallow.
That's right.
Wiping off his mouth, swallowing. And it's like they never put that sort of detail into one of the ABC episodes.
That's true.
They're roasting marshmallows on a radiator, which seems dangerous because there's something like on top of the radiator too, like a shelf. It's like, shouldn't that be on fire?
And there's like an incidental thing later in the episode where like Duke walks into the room behind Jay and Doris while they're having a conversation. It's like you never see him actually walk in through a door before and he just appear.
That's true. I think they're definitely trying to put their best foot forward animation wise in this first episode. That's for sure.
For sure.
And
I know it's not going to be line of the show, but I love Russi Taylor as Penny.
Mm-hmm.
After Jay, you know, because they've been in the rain, and she puts some maternity clothes on because the only thing that fits. Her line reading of "Are you going to have puppies?" is the cutest thing ever.
It is cute. I will say the cuteness does work, even though it's not of the tone of the critic.
It's cheap. Well, this whole sequence honestly felt slightly off-tone to me for the critic because this is like on a classic sitcom that you would think the Simpsons writers would be better than, which is we have to introduce a new regular character who's – we've retooled the show. We have a new regular on the show. We need to introduce them really fast. So, okay, 2 minutes of their life story and then, oh, now they're already part of the gang. So it'll be normal when they're around all the rest of the guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like I remember that happening on – the third Bob Newhart show, where he was a comic book creator, I watched it because okay. I like it was called Bob on CBS.
Because you like comics.
Well, so it's really funny, actually. The situation with Bob was that it was co-created by Mark Evanier, who was a.
Really?
Yes. He would go on to TV production and he pitched a show basically, which was Mark got his start as an assistant for Jack Kirby. And he basically pitched a show, what if Jack Kirby was the star of a sitcom, which then turned into what if Bob Newhart sort of played Bob Kirby, Jack Kirby, who created a character called Mad Dog.
They're basically the same guy.
And so the entire first season takes place at a comic company, basically Marvel. And then when the second season starts, he is fired from the comic book company and he gets a new job and some new coworkers. And it really annoyed me. Just like it was how I was – truly introduced to the clown show being shut down for retooling.
That's right.
But it was so depressing. But it had that first new episode of meet this new character. Or if you want a John Lovitz example, his first episode on news radio. The same deal of we got to introduce this new character now so they can just be a normal regular the next episode. And that's how Alice comes off too. It's just a lot of sped up stuff there.
Yeah. We learn Alice is pretty handy with a paintbrush. Do her art skills come up ever again in the series? I think they were establishing her with that ability, but it never happened again. I mean, she can forge the Sistine Chapel, which is pretty awesome. Why did she should have forged art for a living? There's
and
millions
she's
in that.
The Parks with George, too. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder, too, she is cut from the same cloth of Marge, of the sad mother who is actually secretly a talented
She painted
artist.
That sailboat. Yeah. So here up next, Miss Fortune comes a-knockin'.
So I come up here to New York hoping somehow, when I least expected it, opportunity would come a-knockin'.
Ms. Alice Tompkins?
Yes?
I've got some news for you. It's your ticket out of this rundown flophouse.
Oh. That's wonderful.
You're evicted.
I love that guy's face and the delivery. It's great.
So perfect.
And also the menace. He's so nice all the time, except for his slam on the door of the eviction notice
You're
with a
evicted.
Closed fist. Like, and that did fill me with fear of like, oh, what if somebody comes up just evicts me for no reason?
In a crisp white telegram delivery uniform.
He made me think of a milkman or the ice cream man. Mm. And also there was a quick cutaway to Ardith just so viewers could know. Yeah. Yes, he is divorced as well. Like
That's right. Sleeping with the judge, she gets to keep everything.
Yes, it's a rare Ardith joke where Jay is not at fault in any way. She just cheated on him. It's not that he's disgusting or hideous.
It's more softening of Jay, more making Jay appealing.
Nobody's calling him ugly in this episode, which is pretty nice.
Yes. Up next, we get a very extended film reference, which I didn't capture because I found it kind of tedious. It's like Forrest Gump 2 Gump Harder, in which basically Bill Clinton does the Bubba scene talking about all the different kinds of shrimp.
I think some of their best – of season 2, some of the best movie parodies are all this episode. Like I think the Gump one is – I also think in like 1995 it just seemed obvious like, yeah, there's a Gump 2. We're going to see a Gump 2 soon. Never happened.
There was a book.
That hated the movie.
I love that book. It's so insane. And Forrest Gump talks about the movie in that book. Gump and Company. It's probably $1 or less.
Wow.
Or free because no one reads books.
I do like a couple of the things he shouts out as – I mean – and the joke is obviously, that Clinton is a big, big, fat redneck guy.
Yeah.
But that he loves shrimp milkshakes and shrimp wine.
Yeah.
I really want to know how you make shrimp wine.
And the last thing is a bunch of items with shrimp on the side.
Yeah, it's just like an apple pie and a big scoop of shrimp.
Yeah, I mean, definitely everybody called the kids – this is back when the only jokes you make about Clinton was that he was a fat hillbilly. But he was even called Bubba. So him taking the role of Bubba from Forrest Gump was extra fitting.
Mm-hmm.
Gump came up at the same time as Bill Clinton, and both definitely preyed upon the nostalgia of baby boomers quite a lot. Successfully as well. Both of them were quite successful. Oh, yeah. The joke about shrimp allergies did not go over well in my household because my brother does have a shellfish allergy, a very close to deadly one.
Oh, no.
Peanuts will kill him. shrimp, not
well,
so
well. Don't tell everybody, you know. Now they know
his address is. Now, yeah, it's believe people when they say they have a food allergy, folks.
A lot of cranks like to play that up, but it will kill people.
Yes, it actually will. And it doesn't. It gets worse. People, in my experience, just seeing it through my brother, is that people go like, oh, yeah, I'm sure. Because they just want to believe, you know, you're one of these millennials who says everything's a problem, right? Like, no, a peanut will kill me. My throat will close up and I'll die. Like, that is
builds character. Come on.
Yeah, it builds character. That's back in my day, kids just choked to death on peanuts and then heated them out.
Oh, so his head doesn't swell up to like 8 times its size and turn purple?
That part doesn't happen.
No, just the throat.
There's definitely some discoloration.
So after being tossed around like a medicine ball with really good animation,
I would say. I love that. It was in Dr. J, he does a little bit of that working out with Jay, but this is so great. His 15-second workout.
Duke's 15-second workout.
And Doris is pretty strong too. She can throw Jay around as well.
Yeah. Yep. And that Jay just blankly takes it.
Yes.
And that's also where I like that he – so you're getting the bit here that he's about to cancel Jay, which is the plot of every goddamn season
episode. Yes, it really is.
But they have to establish it in this so it can be solved. But just him going like, I'd hoard my nuts, winter's coming.
And I just want to say that shot when Duke leans in and leers at Jay, like the way that the shading is done on his face. Like,
it's really well done.
I really wish that I could just grab that as a screenshot and use it as like a Twitter avatar.
Find the cell. It's probably really cheap. So Jay wants to solve Alice's problem. And for some reason, I don't know why, he turns to Duke for advice. Duke, the man who tries to destroy him at every turn, humiliates him, is basically in a slave pack with Jay.
Yeah, that he just said, I'm about to fire you and you should be scared. He's like, so anyway, what's your advice?
So let's hear it.
Now, about that lady friend of yours, I say slip her the money without her knowing. The best charity is always anonymous.
What about that?
All hail Duke. Duke is life.
Duke
All
Phillips Hospital.
All hail Duke. Duke is life. All hail.
The statue eats a pigeon.
Pigeons seem to like the sound of my...
That is one
of the
greatest jokes.
Line of the show.
Yes, let's give it that. Yeah,
yep,
I mean...
Yep.
The fact that he has to eat pigeons every day, live, as they crawl into his throat.
He's pretty normal.
In his office.
Yes.
Yes, and it flew in through the window. And then just his pronouncement of, all hail Duke.
Yeah.
Duke.
He wouldn't just build a hospital. First, it's called Duke Phillips's Hospital, not like Duke Phillips Memorial Hospital. Duke Phillips's Hospital.
He owns it.
And there's like a golden statue of him.
With giant golden statues of him that with the mouth moving to say, all hail Duke.
That screams it over New York City all day long.
I like to think that pigeons don't like the sound of his voice. It gives pigeons like a death wish. Like, I must find death and crawl into the southern man.
I also love the ridiculousness of the statue, which is not alive. It chews the birds like munch, munch, munch.
And it stops talking.
It stops talking to eat the bird.
Yeah.
It's just so ridiculous. That is the zaniness of season 2 personified for me. And just like the Duke went from being a Ted Turner parody to a guy who just eats pigeons and nobody even notices.
Well, he didn't like walk through Jay's wall into his apartment and walk out that way.
True.
He was a superhuman before, you know, the Duke Phillips syndrome thing happened.
Tune to Fox, where we can say boobies.
You're invited to a special Oscar edition of The Critic.
Chuck, you know I want one more than ever.
With special guests, Gene Shalit, Rex Reed, and Siskel and Ebert.
Roger and Gene have such great chemistry together.
Hasta la vista, Porky. Cue ball in a side pocket.
A brand new Critic, coming up next.
So Jay gives an envelope of money to Alice, but he accidentally gives it to a crazy postman, another sign of the times. But we're going to hear...
Yeah, explain, if you want to hear the full explanation of the crazy postman trope, I think we did that in Homer Loves Flanders.
Right, yes.
But it was just the automation kind of was driving postal workers in insane because they were being treated inhumanly.
Yes.
And apparently they started getting treated better, and that's why there are fewer outbursts.
Spree killings are everywhere now. Not just post offices.
Yeah.
Find one today. So here's what happens after that mishandling of money.
Jay, were you trying to give me money?
No, I was giving it to my good friend, a crazy postman.
Look, I do not take charity. Daddy only gave me one thing, his pride.
His prod?
No, his pride.
His broad?
No, his pride.
Forget it.
He just lets it drop. I don't care anymore.
His broad.
Slightly offended by that.
His pride.
Pride.
I like the pride at which he says pride, too. Yeah. Pride. So many jokes. I mean, that kind of was a joke about being a country bumpkin, as Duke will comment on later.
Yes.
And then we get a cut to another woman Jay has driven insane.
Yes.
No, I like that. He drove her insane through constant need of attention and neediness, not hideousness. Like, it's not that a woman slept with him and then is in a shower for a week to try to scrub the filth off of her.
That's right. Yeah, it's not. It's a lesser version of that. Just, it's more like Jay's insecurities drove a woman crazy, not his just pure disgustingness.
Yeah, it's not that he is a troll.
But then right after that, I feel like we learn that a lot of this is probably his mother's fault, because
it's true.
The last woman who dressed him was his mom, who put him in the Little Lord Fauntleroy outfit, put him on the bus to Attica prison, and then was like, whatever. I thought it was summer camp. I don't care.
It'll be fun. But
he can be their little mascot.
But yes. Yes. But
in every boy's life, there's a summer of 72.
It's referenced in the film The Summer of 42, yep. Which The Simpsons will also reference in The Summer of 4'2". But actually, the Attica riots were in the fall of 71, not the summer of 72. Do your research, critic people. Oh. No wonder that show was canceled.
We don't see rioting. We just hear a lot of growling while he sings Animal Crackers.
Well, I feel like if he's going to Attica in the early 70s, they are referencing the Attica prison riots.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes.
Fair enough.
But Jay does offer Alice a job. Let's hear it.
Well, I am tempted, but there is one more reason I shouldn't work for you.
Oh. Are the first two letters B-O?
No. If I take the job, it'll be impossible for us to date.
We were gonna date?
I mean, tell me more, my Dixie Riddle Cup.
Honey, I am a little attracted to you. So what should we do?
Don't take the
job. I'll take the job.
Excellent.
Bites his finger.
Did that hurt?
No, I severed the nerve.
Great Foley on that. It makes me grab my finger when I hear it. Just think about it.
It's so gross.
And the line, I severed the nerve. Like, he's very proud of himself.
So for the rest of his life, he has just permanent nerve damage in his finger thanks to that scene.
We need to keep track of all of the ailments of the critic people, like the shard of glass in his head, all the liquid in Duke Phillips' eyes he's got to inject, all the problems.
Well, it's already been established that Jay has had every disease known to man.
That's true.
For delusions of grandeur.
Oh, Alice should not sleep with him if that's true.
She really should.
Yeah.
But it does help that, like, she is legitimately attracted to him, which, not unlike with Homer and Marge, it kind of makes you like him more to know that any woman could find him attractive.
I have to say, though, after getting through all of season one and hearing that, my initial reaction was like, what is wrong with you?
Alice is severely damaged.
Well, I mean, her husband did kind of hurt her. Maybe
that's
true.
But you pointed something out about her husband.
What?
Cyrus?
Jay looks nothing like her husband.
Right,
so you can't even point to it as like, oh, she has a thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a type. Maybe it's like Jay is the exact opposite. It's like, well, that tall, skinny, good-looking guy treated me wrong, so I'll go with the fat, dumpy, ugly guy. He will treat me right.
That's good logic.
Oh, that's how it worked out with you and me.
It's exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
That is exactly it. No, I only used to date tall, skinny guys.
Hey.
And I was wrong.
I mean, Michael's not
I was
tall.
Wrong.
We're mostly not evil, I will say that. So Jay calls Alice a Dixie Riddle Cup, which is a real thing.
What?
They are Dixie cups with riddles in them. So if you want to drink a beverage tainted by the flavor of Dixie cups, you can read a riddle at the same time. Here's a commercial.
Hey, kids, what's the same on the outside but different inside?
Dixie Riddle Cup!
The riddles in my box are different from the riddles in your box. What is black and white and red all over?
A penguin in Miami Beach.
So that's very funny. Those are Dixie Riddle Cups.
It's not even a riddle. It's a joke.
Yes. The Dixie Joke Cups is not as good. It doesn't roll off the tongue as well. So yeah, Dixie Riddle Cup. I knew it had to be a real thing or a reference to something, so I looked it up, and there it was.
I liked Dixie Cups, actually. Like, they were the things you'd get at the dentist. They are absolutely terrible for the environment. They are disposable wax cups, and they'd also make things taste weird. If you were to, like, bite the edge or taste the edge, it's like, oh, this is kind of this is real waxy.
They were really just, like, toothbrushing cups for me. They weren't, like, liquid beverage cups.
Totally. But kids loved them. Well, especially when it's like, oh, I want a new riddle on this cup. Oh, boy, this riddle. And Dixie Riddle Cups, be ready for this reference to come back again in the Riddle of the Sphinx gag from Jay of Arabia.
Oh, you're right. Ooh. You're right. Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that. Thank you, Henry. So up next, basically, Jay needs a makeover. And this is like one of, I think, 19 scenes in The Critic in which he is being dressed in different outfits. And they have run out of big and tall joke names to name stores. So they just cut right to the inside. So he is dressed as Alex from Clockwork Orange, Scarlett O'Hara. And finally, I think they put him in the Tom Cruise Rain Man suit again. Is that the same suit or just a similar suit?
Same one.
Very similar, yeah. If it's not the same.
The same one when he and Jay, when he and Marty got in a better outfit.
Yeah.
And to feel better, and then they saw clowns dressed the same way. This is not to be confused with the other makeover scene where he ends it dressed as Big Boy and ate a bunch of plastic burgers.
That's true. I mean, I think there's at least four so far. But now, I guess all Jay needed was the suit because now Coming to the Attractions has an audience. He has confidence, and there's great animation of him dancing. This is some of the best animation in this episode of him, like, shaking his hips and
one
the camera
of my
angles moving
gifts
around.
Ever is his hip shake and just showing off his butt, which his body has not changed. It is just being presented better, as Alice said.
Hey, that's what a good suit will do for you, man. Yeah. Any well-fitting clothes to highlight the good parts and sort of smooth out the bad parts.
TV makeovers were like a huge trend at this point.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
And his ratings jump from squat to squat and a half.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful moment where she saves his show. And I do believe there's never – I mean, it's not to say there aren't jokes about his bad ratings. But I think the rest of the series, there is never a joke about, like, your ratings suck. This is about to be canceled. There's no plot line about a canceled show. Like, so this is Alice both making him more likable and literally saving his show from cancellation, thus ending the plot of half of season one. One, which was your show is about to be canceled.
I love that him just dancing around. It's like Duke sees that and just assumes, oh, this is some sort of Jewish holiday.
And he's mad about it. He's like, this is some sort of Jewish holiday? Yeah. So
the way he says, shalom.
That's great. They love putting Yiddish words in non-Jewish people's mouths.
Yeah.
In fact, Alice Yiddish will do it later, and Jeremy does it all the time. Yep. So just a running gag on The Critic. And on the newly revamped Coming Attractions, we see another Scent of a Woman parody, Scent of a Wolfman.
Who gets the raw dead goat?
That would be me. Now come on, Charlie. I want to get a drink. Now let's get some exercise.
Catches a frisbee. I like Maurice LaMarche's Pacino in this one better than Scent of a Jackass.
Yeah.
It's more gruff.
After drinking out of a toilet, and the thing that sticks with me about this is that, like, so he just waits for his food to be delivered to the table, then he gets up and leaves and goes to do something else. He doesn't eat any of it.
He's a dog. He's very distracted.
Yeah, it's funny that the last episode, they already had the Scent of a Woman joke, and they had the Jack Nicholson wolf joke.
Yeah.
Now they have combined the two of them for a new movie parody. There's only so many movies that they could make fun of, that they'll either make fun of classic films of 30 years before, or they'll find one of seven movies from the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And this seemed like it was destined with a show that introduces Alice. She finally meets Duke, and they're both Southerners.
They are so perfect. I wanted a whole episode of the two of them together.
There could have been one in the season three, that Reed Harrison role. Let's hear their epic meeting for the first time.
You know, Southern people like us have to work extra hard here in New York. People hear the way we talk and just assume we're illiterate country bumpkins.
We're the Bears who sing for Duke, doo-dah, doo-dah, drinking moonshine till we puke.
Oh, da doo da. Big, dumb, belching bear.
We're the Bears who sing for Duke, doo-dah.
Maybe we should leave them alone.
Big dumb belching beer.
I love Duke's lowbrow sense of humor. And before that, we hear that Duke spoke at her high school commencement ceremony or graduation ceremony, and he was basically looking for to score some tail.
As long as they're over 18, he asks if they're over 18.
Yeah, I still give that speech today.
Yeah, the title of his speech is, I just drank two bottles of tequila. My wife doesn't know I'm here. Any of you girls over 18?
So whatever Jane Fonda type woman he was married to at the time.
Well, the only other time we heard about that wife is the ex-wife who will get his diddly squat.
Yes.
And I have to say, as a Southerner, I could identify with this the way people look down on you from an accent. Like, I didn't think I had a Southern accent as a kid, but I Well, first, I watched a video of me when I was like 11 at some school function when we had moved to Florida, where nobody there really had a Southern accent like I had in Atlanta or Arkansas. And when I watched it, first off, I just wanted to kill myself afterwards. I was like, you should never watch videos of yourself as a kid. They only make you feel horrible. But second, I had a really fey Southern accent. And I think it eventually just was something I got rid of because you get made fun of or looked down on.
So it was
in
like a,
without Southern accents.
Not trying to insult you, Henry, but it was a Jim Neighbors-ish sort
it
of.
It was quite Jim Neighbors-ish.
Patois.
Yes. It was. Which,
I wasn't sure if you're going Jim Neighbors or Truman Capote with the fey part.
No, more Jim Neighbors, more country Jim Neighbors style, which was like that. I also wonder, like, why did those kids call me gay slurs as a kid? I didn't think I acted that gay. Like, and then I watched that video, like, oh, okay, I see it now. Mm. They were still wrong to do it, but yes. Obviously, but I get now why I wasn't passing as much as I could. So anyway, the joke about being disrespected for a Southern accent, is it there's some truth to
it. Yeah, there's definitely truth to it. I love the idea that Duke needs to have some animatronic country bears in his office behind a panel with a giant button on the desk.
Right in the center.
Whenever he's just, I don't know, in a bad mood or needs to scare someone he's negotiating with or who the hell knows why he needs to hit this button so those bears would sing for him.
He could have dressed up as pandas, though. You know? He has pandas. Hong Ping, don't eat daddy's Picasso. So we have – who wants to explain the country? I mean, there was a shitty movie when Disney was turning every ride and attraction into a movie with Christopher Walken. But it was an earlier – had earlier origins.
For decades and decades, there was the animatronic Country Bears Jamboree not even ride attraction. At Disneyland.
Yeah, it's a show.
It was like, the Tiki Room or something.
And it would be like co-opted by Showbiz Pizza. That was the big deal about Showbiz Pizza and Chuck E. Cheese of just like, you don't have to go to Disney World to see animatronic shows now. Just go to this bad pizza place.
Be terrified by
it. Yeah, eat bad pizza, be scared by robots, go home crying.
The Country Bears are a little more cuddly, but they sang songs about being country bears and having like good time, fun songs, and so this is one of their hit songs from the 70s.
Let's hear it.
Us bears, we do love nature and tramping through the woods. Us bears, we do love fishing every hour if we could. Us bears, we do love singing in country harmony.
But no drinking moonshine.
Yes, no.
I like when Homer calls it a jamboree.
Yeah, jamboree.
He doesn't know
I'm not sure I hear an actual jug being blew there, but I love that bass guy just going, I want to hear just his track.
We need to isolate it.
A bear.
We need to buy the Country Bear master tapes from somebody.
They must sell them.
Yes, let's do it.
Please give on Patreon.
New Patreon goal.
One, so the Country Bears, they like Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean. They did make a film to try to popularize the Country Bears with a new generation of kids.
Even though the attraction is gone.
Well, so the attraction wasn't gone when they made the movie.
I think it was from Disneyland. It turned into Winnie the Pooh.
Okay. That's right. I think it was still in World, but
anyway,
at the time. And Haley Joel Osment voices one of the bears in it. And now they're all gone. There are no more Country Bears. And apparently in one of the places where the Country Bears were replaced, their heads are now on a wall in the area to show that like the bears are dead.
Oh, my God.
Hung over Trader's Gate.
It's something the Disney parks always do when they change a ride. They keep a tiny bit of the ride still there. It's something Chris mentions multiple times about one of his old favorite rides, the 2,000 Leagues Under the Sea, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea ride, became Little Nemo. But apparently there is a
– Finding Nemo.
A Finding Nemo. There apparently was a Nemo ride. The reference to the classic Nemo in that ride.
Interesting.
From Nemo to Nemo.
It makes sense. It makes sense. So in this new – this gritty reboot of The Critic on Fox, we're introduced to Lane Riche for the first time and Jeremy. And Jay explains his burning love for Alice to Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
Jay, good to see you, mate. How's your new assistant?
Jer, she's changed my life.
My show's better. She makes me laugh.
Have you done the dirty dingo?
No, it's not that kind of relationship. We're just friends. We are together all day, but I never touch her porcelain skin, her soft red lips, like rose petals from the Emperor's bathwater. Bathwater, I tell you! Bathwater!
Look, Bubba, you can't go on like this.
You're right.
I want you to go to that woman's house tonight and tell her how you feel about her.
I'll do it.
In the words of the poet, carpe canem.
Yes! Carpe canem? Seize the dog?
You heard me.
You heard me.
And he calls him Booby. Yeah.
It is a weird combination of I love the way bathwater is said, but the animation is some of the cheapest in the episode. Like, they just paused
a scene. Yeah, it was like two frames on the bathwater. Yeah. Like,
meanwhile, if like you watch, like, there are two black women sitting behind him, and they just like both drink out of martini glasses in perfect unison until he starts screaming, and then they turn around and start reacting to him.
Oh, wow. I should have looked at
that. I missed that.
He's just so distracting as screaming bathwater that you just they really speed through Vlada and Jeremy. There's just no time to introduce Vlada and Jeremy to the audience.
Yeah, like, we don't know Jeremy is a movie star or anything like that. And in the pilot, he's introduced with a Crocodile Gandhi clip. But in this one, it's just Jay's friend for now, for all we know as Fox viewers.
And most times when I hear the phrase carpe diem, I do think of seize the dog. I can't not think of carpe canem.
And he does it, though. He goes out there, he picks up a dog.
It's just some random
dog. And then he tells him, you know, wish me luck, dog. I'm in love.
And that's when he goes to Alice's and we meet Cyrus, played by Sam McMurray, who actually played a few incidental voices on The Simpsons' first season. He was a Tracy Allman show.
He was on Tracy Allman's show.
He was as regular on it as Julie Kavner and Dan Castellaneta.
I wonder if he could have made those Simpsons millions if he would have stayed on past the first season. He played I Could Love a Million Girls, that guy. And, of course, Howard from Howard's Flowers. We all love that character. He was a great character from the first season.
He could have gone in and out as a used voice with, like he could have been the other Hank Azaria, really. Or they could have kept him instead of Hank Azaria. And Hank Azaria would be poor now.
I wonder if there's a story to that. Like, did they ask him past season one? Did he just not want to do it? Well, did he think the show was dumb and not had a future?
They were also suing.
Oh, you're right.
Or they were being sued by Tracy Ullman, so they might have just been like, no, Tracy Ullman people. Like, it might have soured the production of the show on anyone related to Tracy Ullman who wasn't Dan or Julie, perhaps.
Yes, so Cyrus is the country western singer that we
saw
before.
Yes, he's there.
He is there before, he is there before Jay shows up. And Jay calls him a putz, and he says, I like pepperoni on my putzes. And Jay says, I bet you do.
Which is a filthier joke than you realize.
Yes, a putz is a penis, correct?
It is, yes.
It's a foreskin, though.
No, it's just a penis. Uh-huh.
It's the entirety of it.
It's one of the rare cases in which Jay is calling someone else gay and not someone else calling him gay.
Yeah, but I mean, it starts out with him calling himself a putz.
That's like, right. He doesn't call Cyrus a putz.
I like that Cyrus could not possibly see Jay as a threat. He's just like, you're his little gay friend. And just thanks for hanging out with my wife. I definitely didn't think you had sex with her because you're nothing to me.
to inject a little bit of exhausting modern day concerns into this, there's like a little bit of toxic nice guyism in that statement. Yeah. It's just like Jay is kicking himself like, oh, I was nice to her. Now she's not going to fuck me.
I just got friend zoned by Alice.
I'm a putz because of this.
Well, I mean, Algie and Mike Reese, not the best writers of women, we've discovered in our research.
Especially when any divorce joke, it's like, okay, every woman is a harpy. A harpy, queen of the harpies.
Yeah.
And the only thing that makes it not exactly getting friend zoned is that Alice did express interest in him romantically.
That's true. Yes.
So she wasn't leading him on with niceness or anything. She did say, we could date, but I work for you, so we can't.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I guess he just throws out the window in three episodes, like, no, we can't work together.
Yeah, who cares? And Jay retreats to Penny's room where they're watching Humphrey the Hippo. And there's a reference to the Madonna appearance on Letterman in 1994 in which she was swearing a lot. I didn't get the clip of Humphrey the Hippo. It's not that funny, but we can at least hear the Madonna clip. This kind of echoes the clip of Cher swearing at David Letterman that was referenced on the last season episode.
This is much more tense. And this, no bleeping. This is from the BBC airing of it. So you're going to hear some of the F words here.
You see, we have so much in common.
I know. Why are you always... I brought something to, like, make a point.
All right, okay, good.
You are always fucking with me on the show. You are always fucking with me.
This?
You are always fucking with me on the show.
She's in a good mood. On the Humphrey the Hippo Club, she's really mad.
Well, yeah. those 10 seconds are her good mood.
Okay. It's much longer, yeah.
So it's a 30-minute interview that actually she extends by one segment by refusing to leave. He's like, so we're going to go to our next guest. No, we're not. I'm not leaving. And she is pissed off now. This was March 31st, 1994. Madonna has been dragged through the media for a decade at this point. And here she is doing his show because she has a new album out. And she knows Dave is going to razz her and ask her questions. And so she's ready to be mean back. And she's just super defensive. She starts smoking a cigar during it.
Yeah, she's holding it during that clip I just played.
Yes, and she just is telling him, like, there's another bit where she says, and you're not as good as you used to be. Like, you're too nice to celebrities now. You're always sucking up to them. And then he has the great rejoinder of, that can end for this interview. And she also asks him, like, what's that on your hair? Is that a rug? And then he says, well, what's with your hair? Is that a swim cap?
Like,
Humphrey the Hippo, it's the exact look that she had on Letterman. She had short black hair that was sort of just slicked down. She's wearing a little black dress and swearing up. I love the Humphrey the Hippo clip.
It's a great caricature of Madonna.
It's a great caricature, and I love how Humphrey the Hippo just serves up a good setup to more of the joke. Of, you know, it's like, don't fuck with me, hippo. First thing she says, oh, did you kiss your mom with that mouth? Well, there's the perfect setup right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also beep, 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 and beep.
That's a good Fox. That's a good Fox-style joke for the critic.
Yes, as Gina Reese said, they were told by Fox to fox it up when they go to Fox. They wanted him to be dirtier when they were on the Fox network. Then we get Cyrus misquoting the Bible about his fickle pickle.
Yes, that's right.
Which, again, is a Gene and Reese standard of...
Do not let Mutris into thine hut.
Homer often misquoted the Bible and made stuff up. So that's Cyrus doing the same. And that's... I also do love that Jay thanks her for sticking up for his sexuality saying, thank you.
Not that I've been eavesdropping. Yeah, and are you gonna mention Dennis the Menace to Society? That was a poster joke.
A poster joke has now become a full-blown movie parody. Yes.
That kid is a pain in the ass.
Good Walter Matthau. Which, so that makes it specifically a parody of the then new Dennis the Menace film that had Mr. Wilson played by Walter Matthau, not a parody of the classic Dennis the Menace TV show.
Classic.
Very classic.
I mean, old, I guess. Yeah, let's say old.
Classic and
again, I liked it more than Lassie. I'd watch five Dennis the Menaces before one Lassie.
And Alice's one weakness is Cyrus singing to her, and that's exactly how he tries to win her back. And Jay does the exact same thing in this next clip.
Alice,
please don't sing to me.
You'd make any home a palace. Even Brooklyn would be Dallas if I could be with you.
Oh, damn.
Cyrus is just a virus.
Hey!
He wants to tie you down while you're still young. Your potential is what's essential. You could someday be another Connie Chung.
That's Jay's song. Very cute.
That's great.
Idiotic, you decide.
Well, he says he can't tell the difference anymore.
I think it's cute.
That is getting older, is losing the ability to tell the difference between what's cute and idiotic. But this is when it just hit me that Cyrus, obviously his name is based on Billy Ray Cyrus of Achy Breaky Heart fame.
All right. Well,
that's where his name is from. And
we wouldn't know about Miley this early. She was just a tiny baby.
And
no, it's actually the ancient Persian king.
And I liked Jay tapping into his natural annoyingness with the accordion, and just though that accordion skill is never mentioned again, really. It's kind of like Johnny Carson's spontaneous accordion playing.
Oh, right, yeah, in the Crusty Gets Canceled.
Mm-hmm. And I also do like right before this scene where she's explaining that she can't say no to Cyrus. First, I like that she has a very Jewish description of a New Yorker subscription of a description of butter on a bagel, like butter on a bagel.
I've been in New York for too long,
and then also that when Jay remembers his second Attica thing, he doesn't even say anything, which I think is a darker joke of, like, he's so scarred by it, he has no witty comeback for that even.
It's just very sad.
It's just like, oh, I'm so sad.
But in the end, even Alice gets a verse. Let's hear her singing, which is very nice.
Jay, I'm glad that you're not gay. I may show you why someday.
Yay.
It's a very sweet ending. I like this episode. I like it's too bad there are only like 9 real episodes of this season. One is a clip show. Because I do like what Alice adds to the show, and I love just hearing Park overall talk.
She is great. Yeah. An extra level of positivity, I think, too, if you compare this to the original pilot, which is him also meeting a new girl in his life who also has brown hair and then actually destroys him at the end of the episode and was a lying monster the entire time. I would say Alice is quite an improvement over that.
Yeah, Alice is great. Mm-hmm. We love her.
Yeah, and unlike in the pilot where you basically have everyone tell Jay how much they hate him and are disgusted by him, you have a character in Alice who tells him how cool he is or how attractive he is. Excuse me.
But I mean, there was potential in having Jay, like a lot of stories being around him dating, but they just made him too repulsive for any woman to stick around. So yeah. I'm glad they softened him and gave him a girlfriend. And who knows, maybe she could have been a wife later. Yeah. They could have had little Shermans together.
And that's why, like, Eleanor had the joke, like, I hope she has sex with him before she murders him. Other jokes like that, too. Like, no, only a serial killer would sleep with Jay. No one otherwise would.
Someone needs ulterior motives, like getting a good review or, the thrill of murder. That's the only incentive for sleeping with Jay.
And I do like that Cyrus gives up immediately, too.
He could have just punched Jay in the face and stopped the dumb song.
Yeah. Like, exactly. Shut up, dork. But yeah. I guess Alice, that wouldn't make Alice love him more.
He doesn't really love Alice. That's the thing where he says, I'll never give up. Hey, gorgeous, what's your name?
That's right.
Like, yeah, he's so distracted. He's like just a dog. He just wave a girl in front of him, and that's all he cares about. And what probably happened is some girl left him, and he's just trying to restoke his ego by just getting her back.
True.
Because men are terrible.
It could have been one of the two women on the cover of I'm Cheating on My Wife, Alice Tompkins. Yes, you heard me. Alice Tompkins.
I'd like to imagine in later episodes he could have come back for another storyline.
Yeah. I think he could come back.
I think he was planned for season 3. Mm-hmm. And then,
maybe in that episode that we heard about. You never know.
In that wonderful interview with Reed Harrison. Listen to it on our Patreon.
So should we close the book on Sherman, Woman, and Child?
Well, I'd like to say this is, I think, my favorite episode so far.
Oh.
Alice is my favorite character in the series. And I feel like introducing her really kind of gave the show a more emotional core. It wasn't just that they softened Jay. It's that having her there softens Jay and makes him a little bit more likable.
Yeah, I think everyone but Marty is kind of a horrible person. You know, like Duke, Doris, Jeremy, like Vlada, everybody is terrible except for Alice.
That also shows you what the show thinks of Marty now. They're like, nah, we don't need Marty.
Yeah.
Reintroduce everybody but Marty.
A cuter, smaller kid.
And the absence of Alice is from the webtoons is like one of the reasons I did not like those at all.
And I hate how callously they wrote her off, just like, fuck it, who cares? Yeah, here's a new person who's not
new
as interesting.
Woman.
We can't afford Park overall anymore.
Women are disposable. It's a new love interest.
Yeah, it's like James Bond. A new one every season.
Yeah, I hate that.
So that was Sherman, Woman, and Child, and I have been your host, Bob Mackey. Thanks for listening. Thanks for giving us money to hear these amazing episodes of Talking Critic. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast every Monday and occasionally a bonus episode on Friday at Retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcast device. Henry, what do you do outside of this?
Well, I'm always on Twitter, always posting.
Never stop posting.
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter. And that's also where you'll find me updating when new stuff goes live on the Patreon. And we thank you for listening to this on the Patreon. There's tons of other cool stuff on here. And be sure to tell all your friends about all the awesome stuff on Patreon. And now to the other hosts.
And let's see. You can hear me on 302010, a weekly podcast where we look that particular week 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago into movies and music and pop culture. And we've turned up a lot of fun stuff. There's something for everybody. And I'm also on Twitter, mostly talking movies, at LeCineNerd.
Michael.
You can hear me every week on Vigigame Apocalypse, the weekly podcast about Vigigames, at VigigameApocalypse.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Wikiparas, but make sure it's AZ, not easy, because easy is a rambling ebooks bot that someone else made.
Can I follow both?
Sure.
Awesome. I'll do that. So thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Sherman of Arabia. We'll see you then.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
But I have nowhere to go.